my son Jesse died of a heroin overdose when he was 21 years old. It'll be 5 years this February. He was attending the University of San Francisco in California, and he overdosed and died in his dorm room alone. We had been struggling for years with him to try to get him clean, and he was on the way. When I went to pick him up and bring his things home, he had taped a piece of paper, a reminder to him on the ceiling. Every day he woke up and it said, "Try to stay clean today." So we know he was trying, but he had one less fling. In the play, there's a scene where the father and the son who had the overdose were having an imaginary conversation, and the father said, "Why did you do it? You were doing so well. Why did you do it? Why did you, you know, do it?" And the son, Wyatt, said, "Pops, it wasn't supposed to be my last hit," which is, I don't know for sure, but I think probably what he was thinking. It was just something to do. It wasn't then, of course, but when I got back home, for one thing, there was a nonstop party in my house for like 2 weeks, people trying to support us. I didn't get the idea to write a play right away, but over time, I'm a writer and I've been a reporter, and I sort of look at life that way. So I started, things started happening, and things that obviously never had happened before, and I started writing them down. Like the friends of ours who got into an argument over who would cook dinner for us that night. The woman who came, and we'd already had so much lasagna, we said, we don't need food. And she said, "Well, let me walk your dog." She used to see us walking the dog. And I didn't have the heart to tell her the dog had died 4 months earlier. And so things like that. Plus, I learned things. Like, we had a session with a grief counselor, and maybe everybody else knew this. I didn't. You hear about the stages of grief. And he made it clear. He said, it's not as if you walk through one room, acceptance, and get to anger in the next room. It's you experience all of them, sometimes many at the same time. It's bewildering and confusing. And I would say to anyone who's had this happen to them that it's also something when it comes to your child that you never get over. It's a little bit easier now, but I remember once we shared, Jesse and I, we're a musical family. You know, my son Jeremy plays the drums, and Jesse was a marvelous guitar player. And so music was a big thing for our house, and he and I would argue over bands. Maybe a couple of years after he died, I was stopped at a light, and I put in an Allman Brothers CD, and Mountain Jam came up, and I just started bawling. I mean, just sitting right there, because he had something we shared. So eventually, I did have enough thoughts, and I thought I didn't have a writing project, and so I started trying to put it together. And I worked on it for 4 years, and I'm glad to have as many comments as possible. But that we're doing a stage reading in Washington, D.C. in late February. One of the hardest things that I had to do was to hold this family at arm's length. Will and Abby, the parents. Wyatt is their son who dies. And I had to create the characters, so it's not biographical. It's not us. I mean, there are incidents and echoes that are included in the play. The best advice I ever got in playwriting was, before you write a word of dialogue, write a bio of your main characters. And it was splendid advice, because I even found later on, when I would get stuck for a line of dialogue or train of thought, I'd go back to the bios and there would be my answer, because I'd already written it down. If I had not done that, I couldn't have completed this project. So I also followed a guide to rising dramatic tension and sort of used that as a guidepost as well. My goal was to increase awareness of the crisis. And when I say that, I almost think, well, some people are going to hear that and say, wait a minute, we all know. It's all over the place. And it's not done in any sustained way. It happens when there's some large moment, or usually something horrible. But I was hoping to find a way to raise awareness, but also to have an audience feel, and this is where live theater, I think, is better than film, is that I think it connects with people because it's happening right in front of you, and it's live. And my goal was to have whoever sees this play to feel the same heartache that we felt. And as far as lessons or trying to, you know, communicate a message, I think that would be that heroin addiction is not a moral failing. It's not a moral issue. It's a disease. It's a physical and a mental disease. And recovery is not a major part of the play that's in there, but it's something we struggled with. And I know every family who, when they find out that their child has used heroin or even smoking pot, when kids get involved in drugs, the first thing you think of is, well, how can I get them clean? And there are some newer theories about it, but I think it starts with not blaming the addict or trying to shame the addict, because that's not going to get you anywhere.
There's a certain type of play, the message plays. They do them a lot for kids, like about bullying, and they have these kind of really flat stereotype characters, you know, where there's like the bully who's the mean, you know, and just very, very stereotypical. And they, you know, have a really cliched kind of interaction. But this was not like that. Like, it doesn't feel like a moralizing play.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I've always wanted to make it clear that it wasn't, you know, the films you get in school about the premarital sex or even the drugs. I mean, it wasn't supposed to be. To me, the best way to communicate a theme is it has to come out of a story that you're going to believe. Not, well, you have to do this, you know, or it wasn't a biographical, nor was it, I'm struggling for the word here, like a corporate video. It wasn't trying to sell anything other than a story.
In terms of what your journey has been since Jesse passed away, what did you draw on from that in creating the character Will?
I wanted to have him be the typical man and want to fix it. Wanted to fix him in the first scene when they discover, they knew he was smoking pot, but they discover what they suspect is heroin, and he confesses to it. He's very pointed, very driven, and very direct. I wasn't so much so in a belligerent way, but I had the misconception that, and this actually does come across in that scene with the dream sequence with the father and the son, is that, you know, let's get him in a program. Let's get him fixed. And we tried that. We sent him to a wilderness program where he spent the first 30 days camping in the snow in West Virginia mountains. And the idea was to teach himself skills where they had to make choices. And he did rehab. He did group therapy. And I think the most successful therapy that he had was one-on-one with a psychologist. He went to school in Boston first, then transferred to San Francisco. And we were supposed to connect him with the counselor there, but we just had not gotten around to it. And I think that's, you know, based on his activities at the time he was in Boston, once he was talking to this person who didn't put up with any bullshit, did keep him honest. You know, the woman, Abby, and to many respects, Sue, I think, recognized that, you know, addiction is something you don't ever overcome. You find a way to deal with it through recovery, but there is no silver bullet. There is no magic cure, and I would urge anyone who hears this, who has a child who's going through this, not to fall for some of the pitches that you get from these rehab facilities, because if they're claiming they can cure your child in 90 days, it's just, in my opinion, it's a lie. This is something that can only be handled through real recovery. It's one thing I can say is I learned a lot after he died in writing the play. And one of the things that made me sad was that I wish I'd known these things beforehand. You know, we did all we could at the time to get the kind of information we needed. And I'm not saying that it would have been different just because I've learned a little bit more about what the best kind of treatments that work. But this is a long answer to your question. There are comparisons. I mean, you know, you can't, when you write something like this and you went through it, there's going to have to be some echoes.
I'm really curious, did you have in the play, you know, one of the driving forces of moving the story along, or maybe the driving force, is Will's obsession with finding out everything that he could about what happened. Did you feel that at any time? Or?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the things that I wanted to demonstrate in there, but I hope doesn't beat you over the head, is that revenge is, it may give you some solace at some points, but it's not going to heal you. It's not going to help you with the loss, ultimately. I got the idea when the night he died, we were actually trying to locate him. We hadn't spoken to him for a couple of days, and we went through his cell phone and found some, actually called somebody, and this kid said, said, "Hey, bro, I've been looking for him." I said, I'm his dad. What, you know, that wasn't right away, but several months later, I looked at his cell phone and I noticed these texts that were sent before he overdosed. And I started out saying, I want to know who this is. I want to see what this phone number is. And then I stopped. I just said, no, I can't know that. That's something I can't know. But it began with that drive to get more information for me began the week I picked him up. The medical examiner up there wouldn't let me see him, and I'm thankful for that. But I wanted to know what was in that hit he got that killed him. What was in there? What were the chemicals? I don't know why I thought that would make me feel any better, but I just did. And she said, "Well, I have to do the report. I'll get it to you later on. I'll mail it to you." And it came to us, and it was cause of death, acute opiate intoxication, which sounds pretty benign to me. I mean, it's just, you know, shouldn't have caused somebody to die. I wanted to know whether it was heroin, and then later on I wanted to know if there was any fentanyl in there, which is what, you know, attention to any drug users out there. You don't know what's in something you buy off the street, and fentanyl makes the drug more powerful anyway. And now they're seeing, getting examples of heroin that's laced with elephant tranquilizers. There's just no telling what anybody gets from street drugs. So, yeah, I mean, that was what gave me the idea for his motivation in the play.
So you walked up to that point, but you yourself retreated
right
back.
Yeah, I didn't want to know. Part of me did, but I stopped and looking at the phone, and I thought, well, what do I do? What will I do if I find out? Just even the trying to roll through the texts, it started making me sad, so I stopped.
I see. I would be that man. I would. I mean, that's why I really relate to, like, I understand that feeling and trying to, and thinking that if I just got enough information that, you know, if I leave no stone unturned. And of course, it's, I mean, like, I understand that logic.
I don't think it's stupid. And the play, Will recognizes at the end that in doing this, he was keeping his son alive in his mind. That by doing this, he would somehow, by getting this information and finding out who was involved and, you know, maybe where did he buy the drug and get all this, and almost as if, well, he's still alive and I'll be able to stop it. I'll be able to intervene to make sure these things don't happen. I know that sounds really twisted, but ultimately you need to let him go. Not the memories, and you know, not, and that I don't think we'll ever get to the point where we don't think about him and miss him.
Will you tell me about, you think that this play could be a performance of it recorded, and it could be used in some recovery programs as a discussion starter. Tell me about that aspect of it.
Well, when we produce, we're going to go do a stage reading, a plain stage reading, and then take it into a studio the next day and get it on video. And going to the completed disc will have a trailer. We may cut separate things for trailers, but it will also have selected scenes. It's a 70 pages, so it's about 70 minutes to watch in its entirety. And if that seems to be too much for a community session, then could just use pull selected scenes that could be played as a springboard to discussion. The sequence with the dream that Will has with the son Wyatt, where they talk to each other after after you know he's gone, could he that's where the title of the play is it comes. He talks of Wyatt, you know, his father's beating up on himself, and Wyatt says, "Stop it! I you know you wanted to fix me, and rehab and group therapy didn't work." I mean, that's where I found out I met new friends who were druggies and found out new ways to get loaded. It's an inside job, meaning that it's the addicts or that it's up to them. To me, I hope that doesn't come across as, well, it's their fault and up to them. I just mean to suggest that you know, people who are addicted, if they want to change, they do need to be willing to go through the treatment, be accountable. You know, take responsibility for their own programs. There are a lot of studies which show empathetic or behavioral change types of treatment do a much better job or much more effective than the classic AA or 12-step programs where you say look for the higher power. These other programs really are more motivational in nature. As I talk here, this is the kind of discussion that I would that I hope to see as a result of seeing that scene. The other scenes, I haven't really figured out which ones to pull. Maybe the first scene where they discover the addiction, and maybe talk at that point about, get the group to talk about, well, what can we do to prevent? Or what sort of things can we do for prevention and also recovery? I mean, it's still a little early in the campaign's progress to figure out exactly what to do. But
in addition to just the tragedy of addiction and overdose, there's also the aftermath for the couple. The experiences that you've had, does this speak to parents who are left behind?
I think I hope it does. They're going to have their own story. The reason theater is such a powerful communication medium is that you know, in the moment, you're living through what the actors are living through as well. And for anyone who's had to live through this, it might give them some solace. I think we all know that there are any number, you know, it is a widespread, it's an epidemic, but everyone has their own story. And maybe by seeing this, I don't want to use the word healing, but at least for at least folks to see that they're not alone, and that here's an example of how one family really disintegrated because they didn't approach it from the right, really as a family unit. I mean, we, my wife Sue, Jeremy, and I experienced this together, and we still experience it now. Christmas is hard for us, and other things are hard for us individually, but we're always there to support each other whenever something triggers. You know, I mean, you know, there are also times that we think about him and laugh about things he did or that we did together. And there are pictures all over the place. So there's a sort of a, you know, often a daily reminder. I mean, people do need to know that in a struggle to try to figure a way out of this, there are support groups. And harm reduction groups is one here that they can be very helpful. There are some recovery programs which do focus on the family. That would definitely be, you know, you need to find some sort of support structure because nobody is going to be ready for this if it happens to them. You can't be because everybody's going to it's going to happen in its own way and it's going to be your own personal reaction.
Do you see the wife as being like the golden character in this, Abby?
The golden?
Is she always right? Is everything she's doing right and everything that Will is doing is wrong?
Pretty much. I mean, I think you need that, you know, just from the dramatic structure, you need that. An instance doesn't come to me from the play now, but I think she makes what she considers to be her mistakes as well. In many respects, there's added pressure on her because she has to find grief within herself, how to mourn. You have to learn how to mourn, I think. I mean, some of it's going to come naturally, but you have to understand the grieving process. And she, being a psychologist, probably is more, I hate to use the word adept, but has at least in theory studied it. But she not only has that to contend with, she has her husband who's in abject denial, and that's on her too. So, yeah, I don't know if she's a golden, but I think she's a stronger character because she recognizes what needs to be done to get through this and for them to get through it together. He's dead set on his approach and lies to her and goes around her and moves as fast as he can to be able to solve this and make the dealer pay.